Yeah, we've officially started, but do you want to start with a big fake laugh right now? Everybody ready? On three, big fake laugh. One, two, three. That was good, you dog, you. What a good, funny joke we all laughed at. All right, ladies and gentlemen, super pumped to be here. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of AM 1160 The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. We got a rock star cast here today. You've been here, right? You've never been on the show. I know your face, right?
Yeah, from a confirmation retreat.
Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. We got Matt from the confirmation retreat here. We got D-Tom from, like, 2007 outside of Lorena's here. That's an inside joke nobody will get. We got Michael Lyons, who looks a lot like that guy who was on Dancing with the Stars here. And we got Nick. Nick, who's rocking and rolling all the way down from Our Lady of the Mountains up there in Jasper, Georgia.
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. And you're new. And so, okay, so we got Nick and Matt are both new today. And then you guys are veterans. We're going to get to fun facts in a minute. But then we're going to dig into the topic of today's episode, which is kind of brotherhood, right? I think the title on the little clapper a minute ago was Band of Brothers. It's Catholic masculinity and all that good stuff. And so I'm really excited to be digging into that here with you guys in a second. Before we do it, you mind opening us in prayer?
Nick? Sure. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask that you send forth your Holy Spirit to be with us here at this podcast and at this meeting. Allow our message to resonate with the people who listen, but also those of us here. Allow us to be open. Allow us to be moved by your Holy Spirit. Help us to convey whatever message it is that you want to be conveyed in this messaging and in this program. Lord, we thank you for the people that are here. To put this program together. We also thank you for the listeners, for our families, for our friends, for all of us that are supporting us behind the scenes to be here to witness to our faith, to our lives as men. And we ask that you send forth your Holy Spirit and your graces to be upon us. Amen.
Hey, man.
Man, you must be going to seminary or something.
That was real. That was a solid. I usually grade the prayers if you've ever done a show. That's like a 94, 95, which is unheard of for guys because girls get a 5-point girl bump. I don't know why they just do. I'm not saying the girls are inherently like bad.
That feels right.
But I would feel bad. You know, I wouldn't feel bad giving you like a 70 on your prayer.
That's fair.
Failing
that's
prayer.
Fair.
But no, that was really, really good. Thank you so much for doing that.
I appreciate that.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb. Are you a convert?
No.
You're not a convert?
No.
With that ability to pray.
That was too good of a prayer for a Catholic.
Yeah, and you got some twangy voice happening a little bit that makes me think you're a...
I'm from South Louisiana.
Oh, okay. It's Louisiana. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
You got any other fun facts for us, Nick? We'll kick it off with you.
Oh, man.
Just three now, right? Three corporate overlords? Yeah, I think three fun facts.
Well, I don't know if it's a fun fact, but it's a fact. I have 5 children.
Heck yeah.
From the age of 11 down to 20 months.
Awesome. So, congratulations. Yeah.
We have only been Georgia residents for a year. Mm-hmm. So we moved here from Missouri about a year ago. Golly, final fun fact.
Welcome back to civilization.
Thanks. Let me go last on the third.
Okay, we'll let you come back.
I'll have to think of
I just drove through the whole state of Missouri this time last week. I was halfway through Missouri.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. it's fine. Yeah. A lot of billboards that just say the same thing over and over and over again. I noticed that was like a uniquely Missouri trait.
Yeah. A lot of cannabis advertisement.
There were a lot of those. Yeah, and some sketchy billboards that I had to say, like, don't read those to my kids.
Yeah.
But there's some good stuff in Missouri. My family's in Kansas City.
Okay.
And so we drove from Kansas City back home, about a week ago.
We were in Columbia, which is equidistant from St. Louis and Kansas City right in the center. So
yeah, I'm not going to throw any shade to all of our loyal Missouri listeners. Yeah, don't put the camera on Matt, who for some reason felt so passionately about it. He was like giving a thumbs down the whole time we were talking about Missouri. You should incorporate that into your fun fact here in a minute. But all right, Michael, you're a vet. You've been here many a time. You just owe us one.
Fun fact, I set the power walking record in middle school at 8:19.
How far did you have to walk?
A mile
in
forward.
8 minutes and 19. Yeah. How do they make sure, like, what's the line of demarcation between walking, power walking, and running?
Both feet can't leave the ground.
Okay, so always 1 foot has to be on the ground.
Yeah, you look really ridiculous going fast power walking.
I was gonna
ask. Your shins and calves really burn at the end of it.
There was this is a true story. I just read it's probably been a year or so, but I read a biography of Teddy Roosevelt, and he won a speed walking competition around New York, and it was like a big hyped up thing. He was going to be competing against this other really fast walker who was well known, and yeah, he won a speed walking competition.
I don't mind being compared to Teddy.
I was about to say, yeah,
worst people.
He's like my eighth favorite president. If you strip out politics, he's my favorite president. Yeah. All right, what you got, D-Town?
Oh man, I didn't even think about this one. Fun fact, I am teaching all three of my boys to hunt this summer.
Nice.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. Are they out? You got them like out shooting a crossbow or something?
Doing the crossbow, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, my boy started with a crossbow, and it's the best thing in the world. So much fun. All right, Matt, you have three, brother. And okay. Can you explain the just abject hatred for the state of Missouri?
It's less about Missouri, more about Kansas City.
No, that's fair. Everybody hates Kansas City.
There you go.
Yeah.
Don't need really to explain.
No, that's fine.
First fun fact, I recently applied to the Archdiocese of Atlanta for the seminary, and I am waiting for a call to see if I have been accepted or not.
No so, way. Nice. Cool.
Just nice. Wait.
We'll congratulations.
Awesome.
Please do. Please do. I'm very excited.
Is there like a battery of, I've always wondered this, is there like a battery of like, do you have to like take a test for entry? Is there like...
Yeah, it was a long application process because you had to do the actual application, which is like 10, 12 pages.
Right.
Then you do the autobiography. And then you have to do a psyche eval, 3 interviews. It's just like a whole lot of stuff that takes time to do. So
good. I feel like that's good. Like
it's a great thing.
I'm glad they make you jump through all those hoops, but I'm sure when you're in it.
Yeah, it's really tiring. But I'm really happy. I got it all done last week. So I'm just waiting for a call, I guess, from Father Ray.
Awesome. I live next
he's a great guy.
I live next door to him in college.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was college buddies of ours.
Man.
Southern Catholic back in the day. Nice. Yeah. He's a good guy. I'm a big fan. All right, that only still only counts as one, though, Matt.
Yeah, yeah. Second fun fact, I have 13 tattoos.
Nice.
All over, everywhere. I love tattoos. It's a lot of fun. So if I end up being a priest one day, I'm going to have a really fun time telling stories about my tattoos.
That is cool. All right. I like it. We did a whole episode on it. It actually got surprisingly heated and significantly edited as a result on tattoos.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a rough cut of our tattoo episode out there somewhere that you guys should all go see. Here's my whole take on tattoos and Catholics. Father Mike Schmidt has one, therefore it's okay.
Yep. That's exactly what
I want. I mean, that's all you need.
I'm not going any deeper than that. Yeah, he says it's fine, so it must be fine. Was that three? We count this. You got one more. Okay.
I love music, especially country music, and I had between Apple Music and Spotify last year. I had over 100,000 minutes of music listened to.
A lot.
Yeah.
And you were doing stuff during that time.
Yeah, I was definitely doing stuff.
Just sitting in a room, staring at wall.
Like when I'm at work, I listen to music, so it's throughout the day. But yeah, it was a lot of.
That's a lot. Like I have it on good authority from the hit musical Rent that there are 525,600 minutes a year. So for like 20% of the year, you were listening to your Spotify.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, I dig it. What's a favorite artist or somebody from your top like 5? I'm gonna judge you for this. What?
Cody Johnson.
That's all.
Who I'm going to see next Saturday in Kennesaw.
Nice.
Very excited.
One of my greatest regrets in life. This isn't true, but it's top 50% of my regrets in life is when I was in high school. I blew off the opportunity to go see David Allan Coe in concert to go hang out with some girl who I broke up with, and now she's married to some other guy. So that was a waste, right? And I'm married to another girl. It wouldn't work out. But that's not the big regret. The big regret. I think I can say this on the air. Jack, edit this out if I can't say this on the air. Is David Allan Coe only got 20 minutes into his set, passed out on the stage, was woken up by his like handlers, and then made a really vulgar hand gesture to everyone in the audience, stormed off, cussed him out, and never showed back up on stage. You have any idea what I do right now to have like David Allan Coe cuss me out? That's super cool.
That's awesome.
Not a great guy at all, but had some really good music back in the
day. That is a great story that you would carry with yourself. Yep. Your life.
But I can't because I was hanging out with that girl I dated senior year.
She was probably having a great trip and then got ruined.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're not going to talk anymore about David Allan Coe and country music. We've already gone through 10 minutes. What I want to talk about today, or what I was told we're talking about today, and what I'm really excited to talk about today, is the idea of Catholic brotherhood, sort of male camaraderie. Like I said, I think the title that was put on the show notes was Band of Brothers. And I really want to dig into this because we've touched on this before on the show, but I think it is something that falls to the wayside a whole lot. Not in Catholic circles in particular, but just sort of in modern Western societies in general. The idea of authentic masculinity and by an extension, authentic brotherhood with other good men. And I feel like a lot of guys have a lot of friends, but a lot of guys don't have good, real, deep male relationships for whatever reason. I say a lot that I had a lot of friends in high school. I went to a lot of parties. I had a lot of guys who I hung out with and who I really considered really close friends. But I don't think I really had like an authentic friendship until college. Probably like sophomore year of college was the first time that I really sort of moved down to that level. So I want to talk about, first of all, what does that authentic relationship look like? And then second of all, I want to sort of diagnose this problem that I see in society with why we don't have those as we should, as we need as men. So I don't know, what does that look like? What does authentic masculine friendship look like? Any thoughts? I know that's kind of a big picture, just throwing it out there, but
yeah, I think the first thought that comes to my head is kind of going back to iron sharpening iron, right? Like when you're looking for brotherhood, especially Catholic brotherhood, you want to be in deep friendship with somebody who's going to call you on in holiness and help you grow in holiness, right? Like if you're not in a relationship that you can talk about the goods and the bads of somebody who's going to help you grow in those areas, you know, then not saying there's not substance there, but there's a whole lot more substance when you can be in camaraderie with people who are leading you as well as, you know, need you to lead them at times.
But what is that? What does that actually, what does that look like between two men? Right. Because I feel like you hear all the time, right? I think one of our biggest ever clips we've ever done on the show is talking about that Indian movie, the Bollywood movie. I think it's really Punjabi. A lot of people said that in the comments. But anyway, RRR, do you ever see it?
No.
The whole movie is about this beautiful, authentic male relationship. And everyone was talking about this as if this movie were like a big gay story, right? As if these guys were homosexuals. And there was nothing to point to that at all in the whole movie. It was just male intimacy, and I think that's an important word to actually use, shown in this really beautiful way. And it bothers me that the immediate response, oh, this must be some romantic thing, right? Yeah.
I think one of the big things that is lost in the male culture is vulnerability. And I think I read this article and it was entitled The Masks We Wear. And a lot of the way that men carry themselves in today's culture is based on what is pandered to us.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, you have all this messaging in media and whatever, and it's, you know, you have to be a high earner and you have to be muscular and you have to be chiseled jawed and you have to this or you have to that. And if you're not, then you're the Homer Simpson fading off into the bushes character,
right?
Sure. It's like you have these two extremes where you're a buffoon or you're a millionaire model, mm-hmm. XYZ. And the overarching majority of people in society are somewhere in the middle. And vulnerability is, in my mind, comes in two ways. Vulnerability to other men from the standpoint of, you know, we have this facade of I've got it all figured out.
Right.
I'm tough. I can do this. I can do that. I have all these tangible skills or these material things that I've amassed, but no one will come and tell you I'm absolutely miserable inside.
Right.
Or my faith life is struggling, and they won't open up. Hmm. They won't offer that to anybody because they're afraid of being seen as inferior.
Sure.
Or they're afraid of being looked at as less than or not having it figured out because we're told that we're supposed to have it all figured out and we're not.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And it's almost like even saying like you were getting at, I think, right. Admitting the fact that we are not these impenetrable stoic blocks of whatever,
yeah.
Right. It's such a difficult thing to do. And at the same time, we have a culture that's saying, your masculinity is actually really, really bad, and you need to either be feminized, right? Which is a lot of it. You need to be feminized. Your masculinity makes you dangerous and aggressive. And then we'll react to that often with this hyper-masculinity, sort of like this Andrew Tate garbage nonsense, right? That machismo, yeah, I got all the money and all the girls and all the muscles and all that.
I was having a conversation with my wife, I think it was even yesterday, and we were talking about the difference between what people say and their action. Mm-hmm. And it's like that person who's like screaming red in the face, but what they're coming out of their mouth is, I'm fine. And right. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You look fine. Just kidding.
Yeah. And that's why I said earlier that I don't think I had any authentic male friendships until college. And I tell this story a lot. I might've said it before on air, but I remember distinctly going to a party freshman year of college, hot tub. Yeah. Big rager, big keg party, all a bunch of girls there. And my kind of acquaintance, my friend, I would have called him a friend, who was this big, square-jawed, attractive guy kicking all the girls out and me getting mad at him. And I'm saying, no, we could make a mistake. We're drinking beer and there's girls here. We're not going to let them hang out. It's late at night. And me being like, yeah, dude, that's literally why I'm here. It's the girl and the beer combo. Like, that's why I wanted to be here. Those are my two favorite things. And instead, we spent the whole night. This was John. I won't say his last name, but from college. Instead, he drugged me over and we sat in a hot tub all night long, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes and talking about the negative effects of pornography and the fact that he thought it was hypocritical that I was treating girls this way while going to mass. And I was, and my initial response was that same, like, screw you, mind your own business. What are you doing? And then as time went by, I realized, no, actually, you actually are the first guy who kind of gives a crap about me. And I want to talk about these things.
I'd say that goes into the hot take that I was going to have a little bit of what it doesn't look like and what I think, and do the mic here so people can hear, is the traditional fraternity lifestyle that you would think. And you hear a lot of folks who, like, yeah, the best friends are from college, but it was really just a load of drinking stories and sleeping stories.
Right.
And I remember I ended up leaving my fraternity in like the first 6 months when they would have these just horrific brag sessions of ways that they would do not good things.
Right.
And it's like, this is not, and I remember distinctly thinking, this is even when I was very Catholic, but it was just like, man, Jesus had friends and he didn't have to subject each other to these weird things.
Right.
It's like, so that seemed like pretty good brotherhood. And this thing that you state as brotherhood seems totally false. And so it's, I think, dispelling some of that. I know there's probably fraternities out there that are better, but that's stereotypical. But one thing that was a good framework that I learned later on, it was said by some smart person, Aristotle, I don't know, some one of these guys.
Sure,
there's like the four types of friendship, where there's the friendship of pleasure, which is, you know, the things that you guys have fun together. So it's a lot of those like drinking stories, your friendships of utility. I had to write it down because I knew I'd forget on the spot, but it's the friendships of utility. So those ones that are useful for you. There's friendships of convenience. So like your work friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the virtuous friendship. Not that any four of them are wrong, but it's acknowledging what those relationships are. And if you strive for virtuous friendship, that's something better. And virtuous friendship is seeking the good for the other. An example of like seeking the good for the other is if you're, you know, single and you're living with one of your guy friends and that person is having their, you know, their girlfriend stay over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's twofold or threefold. It's one, having enough time and patience to build a relationship so that anything that you say will be received well.
Which is huge, by the way, so you don't sound like a preachy, holier than thou kind of
guy. And you know, that you're respecting the individual and not just doing it again to feel holier art thou. Two, it then is the courage to speak up. And three, it's like you say, hey, you know, you say that you're striving for this, but this is something else, and doing a call out, but in a compassionate way. But it's not because you're judging them, it's because you're seeking the good of their soul and that of their relationship, and being able to do that sort of thing. I think that's a tangible example of how that can be done in a Catholic context.
And to piggyback off of that, society as a whole has totally taken hostage the word love.
100%. Yes.
That is the definition of love.
Right.
Being willing to tell your friend that you have a close relationship with, that they are not acting in accordance with their faith, that you are there to help them, but you won't stand idly by and perpetuate whatever it is that they're doing. That is love. This whole idea, and maybe I'll get off on a tangent, but this whole idea of this church of nice where we can't tell anybody the truth, we can't tell anybody something that might upset them or offend them for the greater good of their soul,
right,
is a problem.
I always make the analogy with this. I have a baby. My baby is 9 months old. Her name is Georgia. She's precious. And we're going to go to the beach for the first time in a couple of weeks. And if she's like all my other kids, what she's going to do as soon as she gets to the beach is she's going to start taking handfuls of sand and shoving it in her mouth. And we're going to say, no, you can't do, stop doing that, right? And then she's going to cry because she really wants to just shove sand in her mouth and it swallows sand, but that's bad for her. And because I love her, I don't want her to do that.
Right.
And it's interesting how like that is so obvious in that situation. I understand power dynamics and we have authority over her in a way that I wouldn't have over my friends, but we do that with physical things, but we don't do that with things that are more important, right? With spiritual things.
Sure.
And it usually boils down to, well, it's going to make them uncomfortable and make me feel weird.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cowardly.
But the reason why it's uncomfortable and feels weird, I guess a little bit because it's the guy thing, but I'd also argue, and especially in today's day and age, that it's that timepiece, the right. ability to invest your time and effort with that individual so that if you do have that relationship, the discomfort can actually come way down.
Right.
Because like the level of investment that you made in the relationship, I think, is directly proportional to the ease of bringing those things
totally.
Up. And unfortunately, in our culture of lack of time and easiest route, then that's that makes it harder, and then we're mm-hmm. not going to do it. And I think another example of that also puts things into perspective, because I think if you have a best guy friend, it's easy to say, oh, I'll spend time with him, I could bring it up, maybe should have. But even in this idea of like your neighbor, it's like this idea of people who say that they want to build a relationship with, they love their neighbor, and
sure.
so but I'd argue that there might be, unless you're living in a Catholic conclave, I would guess that maybe a lot of Catholics out there, they don't know their neighbors very right. well, because they, when they come home, they like don't want to be bothered. They mm-hmm. do want to be insular. And so I know that's not necessarily like the virtuous buddy-buddy guy relationship, but that is, you know, being a light to the world in a different way. And you can turn those relationships of convenience into a virtuous relationship if you put in the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, the sort of like talking about how putting in the time for those relationships, because it is one of those situations where you almost have to make the love deposits before you can make the withdrawals.
Great point.
Me and you, Michael, we don't know each other that well, right?
Yeah.
If you came at me right now and like started criticizing me like a moral failure, of which I have many, right?
I have on the post-its over
I
here.
I saw that. I wanted to bring that up. It was weird that you had that written before I showed up to that. No, I would immediately put up a whole bunch of walls and be like, dude, who the heck are you? What do you think you're doing? I've known you, D-Tom, for half my life. We've lived together. I still wouldn't like it at all, but that's what makes it an act of love is,
yeah.
and I would listen to you. I would sit down and shut up, as hard as that would be. And it would hurt my pride in a big way.
Yeah. I think the reality is there that like with those closer friendships, like you're where you have developed that time and what have you, you are willing to hammer it out. Right. You wouldn't like it, but I feel like you would come back at me with like whatever your refutation is. And we would actually, you know, hash it out and work
right.
through it, right? Like, so it becomes like a philosophical discussion, right? Because I mean, we all have malformations that we need to navigate, and sometimes just being able to duke it out in words and kind of have that philosophical discussion helps it get a resolution, right? I mean, because usually when there's a uncomfortable disturbance or whatever, it's because you actually feel convicted to an extent, mm-hmm. like you feel called out for it. And there's righteous reason for it. Like, you know, internally what I just said to you is like, oh man, he's probably right, but I don't like it. So we're going
right.
to, you know, really, really get through that. But yeah, I think the other side of that is in that intimacy that you share in that brotherhood is the openness to receive that.
I think one of the things to add there though, is that because you have a relationship, he has stock in your life.
Right.
And
sure.
That's why you would react the way that you do, because there's an element of you feeling like you've disappointed somebody that you have given stock to
sure.
in your own life.
That's a great point. Because when the random person comes off the
yeah,
street
like,
and yells something,
yeah.
all right.
Yeah.
That's great.
But that shows
right,
that he
right.
matters.
Right.
And his opinion matters. And his depiction of you matters.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting too, and we're taking a break here in a minute, but I want to get this thought out. I've been thinking about it ever since you talked about your fraternity. how desperate we are as men for that sense of community and belonging, right? We even said, yeah, you're wearing a That Man Is You shirt right now.
I'm starting it at
OLM. Yeah. We want community. We want brotherhood, and we suck at it for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Matt?
No, we used to have it at St. Michael's, and then COVID came around and kind of died it out. But
That Man Is You?
Yeah. I miss it. I went when I was in high school, and I loved it.
Can you tell us a little bit about it before the break?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. We would meet every Friday morning at like 5:30, 6 a.m. So we're all tired, but we're all there. We're all watching videos. You know, it's just, and it's this vast age range. You know, it's guys in their 80s. It's me when I was in high school, I was 18. And it was just all these guys coming together to not only just learn about, you know, masculinity and manhood, about how to be a good Catholic man, how to be a good Catholic dad, but also just being together, praying together. One of my favorite memories from it was sitting down and we prayed a Divine Mercy Chaplet together. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting there looking at all these men praying together and thinking, wow, like I've never seen this before.
And it's jarring when you see a bunch of men doing that in particular.
Right.
One of the best lies that the devil has worked out in the past century or so is feminizing religion, right?
Sure.
Selling this
Absolutely.
Lie that religion is in some way inherently feminine. I'm reading this book, or I just finished reading a book called Defenders of the West, and it goes through these eight Catholic men who physically defended. It was in the wars against Islam, right? And it's all these guys, the way they talk about their faith, and they talk about Christ, and they talk about his mother, and it's all draped in this masculine rah, 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 in a virtuous, beautiful, right, authentic kind of way. Mm-hmm. And that was sucked out of the church. I mean, not entirely, obviously, but pretty darn close. I mean, I remember 30 years ago walking into a Catholic church for the first time, or 20-something years ago, and me thinking, this is the most feminine thing I've ever seen. And expecting swords and shields and St. Michael statues and stuff and being sorely disappointed. So we need to bring that masculinity.
I would argue that the church needs to go back to that.
I would too.
I mean, there was a day of crusaders that
beautiful,
needs
man.
To come back.
Hey, we got a Jerusalem cross up in our church right now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to have to take a quick break here in a second. We're going to run over to some of our sponsors. But before we do take that break, I do want to thank the 2001 Oops, I Did It Again tour for providing us with my microphone for today. So while not an official sponsor of the show, we did tell we would encourage all of our listeners to buy tickets for the Oops, I Did It Again tour, 2001 Britney Spears. Don't look up any videos of it. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's raunchy and terrible. But big thanks for the microphone today, guys. All right, everybody, we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio.
Hey guys, for the past 500 years or so, the church has outlawed selling indulgences, which hopefully means that you've got some spare cash laying around. If you're looking to tithe, we here at Honest to God would really encourage you to run over and donate to The Quest Atlanta. You can do that on questatlanta.com. Thank you so much for all of your support.
Yep. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. We're still rocking and rolling. We got Max. We got Jonathan. We got Michael. We got Nick. We got a stranger in the production chair over there. He's killing it, though. And then, as always, to my right is the void that may or might not be. Show knows Benny. Glad to have you. We're not. It's good stuff. But we're talking about masculinity, Catholic friendship, and what that actually looks like. And you were saying off air a second ago, Nick, this would be great to do like 8 hours of just kind of open forum. I wish we had that kind of time. Unfortunately, there are constraints with radio. So I do want to jump right back in. And I want to start with something you mentioned off air, Matt.
Yeah.
We were saying we wanted to get into some real world examples. And you mentioned Jonathan and David from the Bible. So can you just kind of take off of that?
Yeah, I was reading it today and just like looking at just the language used and how it said, you know, Jonathan loved David as his own more than like the love of a woman. Mm-hmm. It was just so beautiful. And so often, you know, like we talked about, you hear people in the culture say, oh, they were, you know, gay for each other. They loved each other romantically. It's like, no, that's actual authentic friendship where you love each other so much that you're willing to do anything. I mean, really, taking it to, you know, hey, my friend's about to be killed. Let's protect him. Let's save him. or, hey, my friend's not doing so well mentally. Let's be there for him. And I guess that's more of a modern day example, but the way their friendship was, I mean, when Jonathan died and David found out, he just mourned. He mourned for days, and it was so beautiful. And to see that kind of love, that friendship come through, and to make a covenant with each other of just like David always taking care of Jonathan's family.
Well, one thing that I bring up fairly regularly is, you know, this desperate desire to sexualize all the things and how ridiculous that is.
It's like a pornification.
100%. And it's because, I think, it's a symptom of the fact that everybody's brains are so addled by pornography and just this fallen world that we live in. But I make a point of saying it's usually sort of a shock value thing when I say it, when I'm talking to a group of men or whatever. I talk about how attracted I am to certain men. I'm like, not romantically attracted, right? But there are men that I'm attracted to. And I think, like, you're an example. I want to be like you. And there's different layers to that, right? There's guys who I think, man, he's such a good dad. Like, I see his kids. I see these grown kids. I want to be like, let me hang out with that guy and pick his brain and ask him 1,000 questions and be around him so I can emulate him. Or guys who I'd say, that guy looks great. I want to have a good relationship with him because I see all these great, he emanates virtue in a way that has absolutely no romantic connotations. And it's just such a bizarre thing. I remember distinctly talking about this pornification of culture going all the way back to when I was a kid in like elementary school, me having this realization that I really liked hanging out with the guys in my class and I didn't like the girls. And I'm like 9. I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I'm gay? That's going to ruin my life, right? And then looking back, I'm like, no, dude, you just like playing Legos, man. It's clearly cooler to hang out with the guys than it is the girls. It still is in a lot of ways. So I'd love to get into some more real life examples of intimate, authentic male relationships. What y'all got?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of different ways that you could identify that. I mean, there's fraternal relationships through hunting, like one of the other panelists said. I can't remember your name. The other thing is being on a retreat, going on a retreat with men. I was very active with a retreat program called ACTS in Louisiana. And it was an all-men's retreat. They had women's and teens as well. But there's a lot of fraternal bonding that happens in those places because it goes back to the vulnerability.
Right.
You go and you're able to be open, to be, for lack of better terms, vulnerable with what you've experienced in life, what's happened to you. I think one of the things that is lost on culture now is everybody's walking around with some level of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Some, you know, whether it's father wounds, whether it's past relationships, whether sure. it's sins that we've committed and the grief and the anxiety that comes from that. And I think one of the things that would make us better men as a culture is admitting those things. Mm. Oftentimes, again, we try to reserve that. We try to put our best foot forward. We try to put on that face and that show that emulates, you know, all the things that you mentioned, John Henry. But the reality is that so many men are walking around today just riddled with
right.
trauma, pain. And it's not cool. It's not worldly, quote unquote, masculine to say, I've been beat down by life
right.
and I'm struggling and I need help.
And I feel like it's amplified by, especially in sort of your more, I don't mean politically conservative, but more sort of traditionally minded circles of men, because it's almost like we so desperately don't want to be this feminine whatever thing. And for some reason, once again, the culture has tricked us into believing that having feelings is feminine,
yeah.
right? And I've had conversations with my spiritual director, I've had conversations with other men. A lot of times what I think we do is we'll pour those emotional need, right? We want to talk, we want to work this stuff out, and we'll pour that into our spouse, or we'll pour this into some female in our lives, and it's not fair to them. I'm right. pouring into my bride mm-hmm. and trying to like, here, let me take some of this and put it on you, when that's not my role in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's because a lot of times we don't have good men who are going to understand that at a deeper level and be able to.
Or on the inverse is that we keep all of that inside of us and we start to push our bride and our right. children right. and our mm-hmm. responsibilities away.
Right.
Because you don't want to admit where you failed. You
and
don't
find 100 ways to numb those feelings.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, you know, we live in a society where, like, Trump and guns and beards as men. And it's like, no, it's not.
It's, well, our society has done a really good job of tying masculinity to consumerism.
Sure.
Right? Absolutely. Tying masculinity to things. Absolutely. Like you said. That later. What's that?
I'm so using that.
Yeah, it's true, man. Somebody said that to me. I never have good ideas. This is all stolen from other people. And it was like this eye-opening thing. It's like, guns, beer, football, what, all these things. How can I pay money to demonstrate my masculinity to people around me?
Let me prove to you how manly I am.
And none of them, right? When the most manly guys I know don't do any of those things. They're right. Really good, virtuous husbands and fathers. And yeah.
Sure. I just had a really good example, and it made me think about how by being virtuous in a group setting, it can actually open up one-on-one personal relationship, virtuous relationships. So an example of that is, thank you. So an example of that is, I have a mentor here in town, and he's written books and he's done all these things where you say, talk about virtues, right? Yeah. Or he talks about things that you can or should do. And it's one thing to listen to someone say it or read it from something that they've wrote. But I remember being in on a retreat with, and he was there, and there was a bunch of his peers were around, and I'm younger, so, but I was just in the group, happened mm-hmm. to be around some of these kind of more developed men, and all the guys were kind of going around, all Catholic men, actually all great men, I would say, but they were talking about the shows that they were watching, and like, oh, have you seen this? Have you seen that? Have you seen Ozarks? Have you seen, yeah. you know, whatever these may be, and you know, all the shows that were popular on Netflix, right. and all of that, and it got to him, and he does have kind of a upheld position in this friend group, and he just said, you know, there's enough bad stuff in the world, I just tend not to watch that sort of thing.
Awesome.
And I was yeah. like, huh.
Very good for him.
And and it was just he just did that, and there's these little things where, hey, you know, he says whether you have money or not, like, you only need to go up to a certain point. So you see what car he's driving, you're like, I know you can afford a way better car than sure. that, but you are humble in that way. And so these things that, you know, the values we profess, you say it in a group setting, so that not only you see that as an example, and then encourages others to not fall into the trap of the societal yeah. things, but then also then in private, you then feel more comfortable when something does come to you. Again, the comfort level inadvertently goes up, because you know, when that true virtuous kind of calling or need that you have in your heart, you know, that person will probably receive it well, because you heard them say this, and you might not even have that that personal relationship before, but it's kind of this hack into, mm-hmm. hey, if you share this in a humble way with a group of guy friends, then the one or two out of the 10 that might be in there that actually are seeking that,
sure.
then you then open yourself up to have that relationship with them.
Well, it's a beautiful way too, to evangelize in a small way without sort of that hard evangelization of me looking at you and saying, let me talk about Jesus with you right now. We have a mutual friend who struggled with some substance abuse and is totally sober, has been for a long time, married, got a lot of kids, he's rocking and rolling, and he doesn't say curse words and he doesn't drink, right? I struggle with curse words and I really like to drink. Right. And so that relationship, and not once has he's really been that guy. No, I'm not going to have one. I don't drink, but no, knock yourself out, man. Feel free to have a beer. Mm-hmm. But those things have caused me to really reexamine myself and my life and how I behave. And it's almost like just a slow sort of notch up and notch up. And we're never going to get there, this side of paradise. Right. But it's just it's beautiful, the sort of examples that we have. And I think we are innately attracted to it, which is why I think we, and by we, once again, I hate to keep using the word society, but I think that's the best word to it. Our society lampoons that, you know, people who are, you know, the goody-goody Boy Scout, or Opie, you know, kind of mentality. And I think it's to sort of mask that secret longing we have to just be good.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's what we're after.
You know, oftentimes the word modesty comes up pertaining to women.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an opportunity for men to exercise their yes. own modesty and yeah. put their own modesty on display of, yeah, maybe I am more financially wealthy and I can mm-hmm. afford that. I can also take that excess money and do something to help, yeah. you know,
right.
society, or contribute to my church, or just tithe more for, you know, or earmark it for some particular project.
It's like a modesty of mindset almost, instead sure. of modesty of appearance. It's like
right.
Your mindset has to kind of come down and almost, like you said, be humbled in a way, instead of, you know, being loud and rambunctious. You know, sometimes it's okay to just be a little more reserved, or to be a little more conservative in speech or conservative in action. It doesn't always have to be, you know, this crazy out there thing.
Yeah, I had somebody define modesty one time for me as keeping private that which should be kept private, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that definition because it applies to our bodies, yeah. Sure, but it also applies to our speech. It applies to the things we talk about. It's the reason I'm not going to have a conversation about some deep marital issue or something with Nick or somebody else who doesn't have a right to that information. And we as men, I think, feel oftentimes that we're sort of excused from the whole modesty debate because nobody wants to look at me in a bathing suit.
Well, I think you, what you said right now, but also what you, I think it was you who said it earlier, might have been Nick, but about the, you don't need to tell your wife every, like there's certain things that you tell that best virtuous friend mm-hmm. that shouldn't be told to your wife. Not that you're keeping things from her, right. But it's just better hand, you know, it's mm-hmm. you don't
better
put that
handled
on her.
By and, someone of the same gender.
And that's where yeah. it's like, you know, there's, I usually use it to get a rile out of friends, but they think there's something to it where like your wife isn't your best friend.
And I went off on that rant the other day, 100%.
And so, I mean, I agree with the tenets of what the stereotypical kind of phrase goes with, but this idea that, hey, this virtuous brotherhood and male friendship is there for a reason. And another example, this kind of came through again, kind of an older group of men, and they are in the age where they've seen a handful of their friends like consider or get divorced. And so that virtuous friendship is like when your friend comes and says, hey, I don't know, is this just not working? And I just don't want to do this and da da da. And what does the world tell you? It's like, well, they treated you wrong, so you go and you mm-hmm. deserve you and do to this. It's like, well, the difference with the male friendship is, or any virtuous friendship is, this is what, like, no, you committed.
Right.
And that's not the option. How do you get, like, we're going to hold your feet to the fire, but also help you get through this in a way. And that's, I think that's something that is very real. Fortunately, I haven't had to have that in my young marriage life just yet, but I know it, I'm sure it's sort of become, and it's great to hear from kind of older men who have been in that situation. They have helped, not always, but a few of their friends.
Well, and I'm glad you said that too, because if there's one piece of advice I have, especially for young men who are looking for like good masculine relationships, look at the guys who are older than you that you look up to, the men who you want to be like, and go talk to them. Like, go hang out with them. You and I have a mutual friend, Dr. Paul Thigpen. He's a friend of the show, who is just such a huge deal to me and a mentor to me. And from the time I was an 18-year-old who was getting into all the trouble and doing all the stuff, I saw something in this guy. I was like, I need, like, that's where I need to be. And I'm desperately trying to claw my way very small baby steps at a time there, and have been for 15 some odd years. But I really suggest that. Finding good, you used the word mentors earlier. I've got a spiritual director that I've had a couple different spiritual directors for the last 3 years, and I cannot recommend it more. It is the best thing in the entire world.
A little plug. There's a ministry I started helping out about a year ago called the Timothy Collective. It's new, but it's
put it in the notes.
It's basically this idea of, it's kind of this mentorship, but it's a little bit more than mentorship, in this idea of like an apprenticeship mm-hmm. with the other, where like the mentor, the older individual is, you know, how do you immerse them in the different areas of your life? So you as a mentee can see like, well, what is their marriage like? Like, you're going over and having dinner with their spouse, or you get invited to, you know, the nonprofit fundraisers, so you see how they're in public. And yeah, they can help you with professional spiritual stuff too, of course. But this idea of 100%, that's valuable. What's interesting though, that I have found, is there's so many young men who that might be made available, but they mm-hmm. just don't want it because they don't want to be told what to do, or there's too much time, or whatever it may be.
That's a hit to your pride, for sure.
And so, but I think if there is any, I would say that there are an abounding number of men out there who are good and virtuous, who are probably open to having that type of like virtuous mentorship type relationship.
Right. Yeah.
And you just need to ask. So
I think so many of these issues we have with becoming the men we're supposed to be, informing the relationships we're supposed to form with other men, come from sort of this innate selfishness that we're all born into. I quote C.S. Lewis all the time, but the one that I come back to all the time is, he talks about how becoming a man is basically taking this mirror that you're born with that's facing yourself, and it's the painful process of turning it around to face outward and realize mm-hmm. that you're not here for you. You don't exist mm-hmm. for you primarily. And it's really hard. I think masculinity ultimately comes down to crushing that selfish person that we are like formed to be by our human nature and concupiscence, right? The fact that we're fallen, and it's painful, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So, do you have a spiritual director, Matt?
I do.
You were nodding, and
I do.
Yeah,
giving
the opposite of the Missouri reaction you were giving earlier.
I love my spiritual director. He is a legionnaire over in Atlanta.
Mine is too.
Yeah. Not the one that's going to Rome soon, is he?
No, he's. I think he's out in like Yellowstone right now.
Okay. All right. We'll talk later. We'll throw out names afterwards.
I found him. He was on a. I went to Georgia College and State University College. And he was there on a retreat. And I remember my first confession with him. He was just like staring at me. And his eyes were very like piercing blue. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being so uncomfortable. I felt like he was staring at my soul. So I closed my eyes, I put my head down. I could still feel it. So I called him out on it later. And everyone was laughing. But yeah, like a year later, I ran into him again. I was like, hey, I need a spirit director. Will you be my spirit director? He's like, sure, we'll try it out.
Right.
We just met and it's been so like perfect. Perfect matching. It's like... We were talking about those guys who can kind of push back on you.
Yes.
Like I come in, I start talking about something, and I'm like, and I get going. I just like to talk and go on a ramble. And he's like, oh yeah, let's calm down. Let's go back to this. Let's talk about this. And then he's all like, roll back. And it's just like, he keeps me in a very like good pace of life because I can just get so up there and
that's
out of
beautiful.
It.
So I'm going to ask a question. I don't want to hijack the show.
Go for it.
But given the option of going to a mass where it's more traditional with a priest that's giving more of a, here's the reality of your soul and your life. Would you rather that homily or would you rather the homily of Jesus loves you and it's all going to be okay? And
right. The obvious answer is you want the masculine homily. Yeah.
Well, maybe, but it seems maybe, like maybe those not. Are fewer and far between.
You know, I
and going back to the brotherhood, like we have to be charging the men with the responsibility of being a man and conveying the message of the responsibility that is given to men. Like you go all the way back to the beginning. Covenant was made with Adam.
Right.
It wasn't made with Eve. And so we as men, especially Catholic men, have a responsibility to defend the faith, to uphold the faith, not only in our home, but also in our community. And I just
and
feel
it's the
like,
result of our masculinity, right? That
yeah,
is part of our nature
absolutely.
As a man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that, so this is at the risk of sounding devil's advocate, but I do become devil's advocate at times, but I think it's more the nuance of like the reality of meeting people where they're at, where there's a difference in like if you truly want this person to become closer to God and become more virtuous, you might not take a certain stance with someone who's farther along in their faith journey.
I think prudence,
later on.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
prudence.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
So
that's where that relationship
comes in. I think in like today's day and world, there's like certain instances of people drawing lines when it's like, hey, there's not. Like, at the end of the day, evangelization, growing in faith is a one-on-one relationship with you and Christ and a one-on-one relationship with those around you who you view Christ through. And so acknowledging, yes, there are certain things that, you know, lines that can be drawn, but the way in which you deliver that, again, the right thing said at the wrong time or in the wrong way is the wrong thing to say. And so it's that prudence of when to say it and how to do it and the investment to be able to get there with that individual.
I read a book a while back and it was, I forget who it was. It was some missionary and they were somewhere in the darkest depths of Central Africa, right? And this like village chieftain or whatever had converted, right, to the faith. And they were talking about how right after he converted and got baptized, he informed them that he was now going to bring all seven of his wives out to be baptized as well. How great is this? We're all coming into the faith. And it was the missionary saying, now's not really the time to say, no, you can't have seven wives. That would be imprudent. He's very excited. His people, the priest is going to come here. And I think that comes into play now. I think, unfortunately, right, in our post-Enlightenment modernist world, right, we're at a place where if you come in with a baseball bat, which is how I like it, by the way, like I needed that
same
as a young man.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here.
That is what attracted me to the faith was these stories of saints and sacrifice and martyrs and all that. But we're so, I don't know what the word is, disordered as a society.
Watered
that
down.
You're right. Their temperance plays in a big way here.
But that's still meeting you where you're at, right? Because they see that you're a man's man. So you like that sort of like, this is how it is, and this is the battle aspect of it. But then there's others who, you know, don't. And I'm not talking about being relative, right? There's truths that are truths, but mm-hmm. the way in which.
Yeah, and I think that's where that relationship, that's why it's so important to have that friendship. You can't just go up to someone and be like, hey, we're best friends. Your life is totally wrong. Fix it. Like, no, you gotta, man. You know, I'm very lucky. I have a best friend of 20 years this year. And there's nothing that we can't look at each other and just be like, hey, man, fix it. Like, figure it out. Come on. That's like one of the biggest blessings in my life is to just look at him and be like, hey, you're messed up. I messed up. Let's like do this together.
So we only have a few minutes left, but that is actually something that I really would like to talk about. Just sort of in closing, that's a good segue. How do you strengthen, right? Because every man who's listening to this right now has friends, right? Maybe they're the superficial sort of the friendship of utility or pleasure or whatever, but they have people that they consider friends and that they probably, you know, they care about, they're friendly with, they enjoy being around. How do you strengthen those relationships rather than sever them and go off in search of someone else, which I don't think is usually the right answer. It is sometimes for sure. But how do you strengthen those relationships that we would have right now to try to transform them into these deeper, authentic male relationships?
You know, I've noticed that crying with my friends has really helped. Like I was hanging out with a guy a couple weeks ago and we went to a concert and then we went back to his place. I stayed at his place that night and, we had some drinks and we were just crying together, like just talking and crying about like God and how good he is and about our lives. And it was just like, we just grew so much closer just because we sat there and cried together. It was beautiful.
Yeah. So that's advice is find your friends and cry.
Yeah.
Well, I think that goes back to like sharing the intimacy, right? I mean, that's a really intimate moment for two men to be able to share and to have that level of love for each other that you can share that. And I think part of strengthening is kind of knowing that you have somebody to share the cross with. Like nobody said that the road that or you're traveling to in the pursuit of virtue is an easy road. And that's the reality that a lot of people just don't talk about is mm-hmm. how difficult life can get. And when you have that brother next to you to be able to carry that cross, I think that alone shares it, right? You know that you have somebody who's by your side, who's not going to let you fall down. Because I think behind that is like the fear of failure for all of us, right? That's such a motivation that keeps us from that intimacy. But when we share those burdens and we share the struggles of the journey of manhood, of fatherhood, of being a husband, that really brings a really strong component to friendship.
Well, and I'm not trying to shoot anybody down, but I absolutely have friends in my life right now who... not best friends, but friends who, if they came to me and started like trauma dumping on me and crying, I would be looking for an excuse to like slowly back
right,
away.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I would 100% sure. Like, oh, my phone's buzzing and leave. Right. Yeah, probably some brokenness on my part, but that's how I would react. But
again, that's like meeting people where they're at and temperance right. in the conversation, kind of reading the room, engaging, you know, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And, the stepping stones. I think you said that earlier. You have to know where to start, right?
Sure.
If a friendship or whatever is in its infancy, you know, there's a right way to go about doing it. And, if you are wanting to give any of that advice, then you need to be prayerfully discerning that too, right? We shouldn't just be ad-libbing every moment either, right?
I've got a good first step, and it comes from something that I've learned. So I think I've already told you this. We have the group of communities around Atlanta called Live on Purpose, mm-hmm. and it's like virtuous young adults living together. And so one thing they try to do is like, how do you, don't want to engineer it in a false way, but right. how do you set an environment in which people actually want to start those types of relationships and grow together? And what I found is the one thing that is super helpful is simply a prompting to ask permission.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of say like, you just open up the door and invite them to come through, but you don't pull sure. them through. Right. And so an example of that is if you guys are at least on the same page, you're talking about any type of conversation and someone says, even if it's like, hey, I want to get that job. Okay, great. Like, how can I help you in a certain way? Like, how do you want me to help you? And then so it was like, do you want prayers? Do you want advice? Do you want introductions?
Right.
What those things are. And then you say, could I follow up with you on that? And then they say yes. And so by simply asking permission, you now then have the reason to then follow up and actually that now you have the in, because it's not you intruding on them. It's them asking you for to help hold them up to this standard they want to be. And it's not an affront to
my pride if you ask me.
Exactly. Right. It's just like, and it can go as deep as soft as like, hey, got this job or thing with a girlfriend, or like, I want to grow in Christ in this way, or I want to break pornography, whatever the thing may be. It's like, hey, how do you want me to hold you accountable or help you? And then just do that and don't push it. And then you say, do you mind if I, you know, if I follow up with you on that? And then it really opens it up.
All right, guys. Well, unfortunately, it was a great conversation. Unfortunately, we have to end. We're going to be a little bit over today, but before we do that, we are going to shoot over to Julian real fast, live from Tiger, Georgia, up there at the Life Team camp. Let's hear what you got to say, Julian.
Hey, producer Julian here, live at Cove Crest up in Tiger, Georgia. Thank you, Life Team, for allowing us to do this. Today on Honest to God, we are talking about brotherhood. And let me tell you, what I experienced today here at Cove Crest was true brotherhood. I allowed myself to trust fall into a group of teen boys that I just met just a few days ago. And that feeling of the Holy Spirit protecting me as my brother and them as my brothers was so powerful. Anyway, sorry I'm not in the studio producing from afar. Love you guys.
And we are back. Thank you so much. We are over time, guys. Thanks so much for being here. Really enjoyed y'all. Appreciated so y'all much. Coming to the studio. Would love to have you all back again. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This has been Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio.
Producer Julian, signing off.
Over.